Okay, so thank you all for joining us tonight for Something to Say at the Seder, the 5786 edition. We've been doing this now for almost 20 years. This is the 19th yahrzeit of my father, Oliver Sholem, Yosef Nissim ben Yecheskel, Avi Umori. And it's gratifying to see so many people here. There were two shul weddings tonight and two shul vorts tonight. So Baruch Hashem, so many people told me they're sorry they couldn't make it, but Baruch Hashem, we have a beautiful crowd. Especially always wonderful to see people that knew my father here. I look around the room, the number of people that knew my father well. And we miss him all very, very much. And he always loved the Seder, and he taught us to love the Seder, as I say every year. And that's why I love to give the Haggadah Shir Leila Nishmas. I also mentioned it's always Leila Nishmas, my mom as well, and my Aunt Berta. The three of them were really the people that raised my brother and my sister and myself. And we have unbelievable Hakaras HaTov to all three of them for allowing us to become whoever we have become. And anything good is their credit, and anything bad has nothing to do with them. Okay, I want to start off with a story. I normally don't tell stories. I like to go straight, but I heard an unbelievable story from Rabbi Moshe Meir Weiss, and I'll tell you why I specifically tell the story over in his name, but I checked it out, not that I doubted for a second that he was telling an embassy story, but I happened to know members of the family, so I checked it out. The story is 100% true, and it's a very famous family story that they love to tell. So there was a little girl, a five-year-old girl, whose name was Shima, and she lived in Europe many, many years ago, over 100 years ago, and she was raised in a very, very, very poor family. But the family loved Torah very much. And they loved the Seder very, very much. And she knew that her older brother, who was 7 years older than her, would always say over a Dvar Torah at the Seder, and it made her so happy. She's 5 years old. She was 4 years old last year when this happened. And she was so happy to hear her brother say over this Dvar Torah at the Seder. Comes the Seder this year. She's very, very, very poor. Just keep that in mind. The treat that they used to get was on Shabbos, they'd get a piece, not a whole piece of cake, but they'd get a bite of a piece of cake. That was the treat that they would get. Okay. So comes to the Seder. She's sitting at the Seder table with her father, her mother, her other family members, and her older brother, the 12-year-old older brother. And he gets up and he says his Dvar Torah, and she's just bursting with joy and happiness to hear this Dvar Torah from her older brother. And she says, wait a minute. She goes upstairs to her room, and she brings down a very carefully wrapped piece of cake from last Shabbos, which wasn't Pesach. She brings down this beautifully wrapped, which obviously was a huge treat for her. And at the Seder, the middle of the Seder, she goes over to her brother and says, I am so proud of how you learn Torah. It makes me so happy. I want you to have my piece of cake. This is pure chametz at the Seder table. Now, I know how I would have reacted, which I'm embarrassed to tell you. But I suspect maybe some of you would have reacted the same way. What are you doing? What does a gadol b'Yisrael do? The father does. The father goes to his little five-year-old girl and he says to her, wow, I am so impressed that you are makir tov to your brother for learning Torah. I'm sure you will be zoche to marry a huge Talmud Chacham because you are so machshiv Torah. You think Torah is so important. You're so machshiv Torah. Five-year-old girl. He doesn't yell at her for bringing chametz to the table. Now, what does he have to do? He says, now we can learn halacha. I never thought I'd have a chance to do this halacha in my entire life. That when you find a piece of real chametz on Pesach, you're supposed to put it on the yontif. You put a kli on top of it. You put a container on top of it because you got to get rid of it, but you can't get rid of it. So he makes a big deal. Oh, we're fulfilling this mitzvah of being kofa kli on top of the chametz. And there you go, burn it in the stomach of cholam light. First of all, the story is paledic for two reasons. Number one, the unbelievable thinking of the father at that moment. That A, he didn't get upset. The kid's bringing a piece of chametz to the Seder table, and he turns it into an unbelievable bracha for her, which you'll see in a moment who the bracha was. And he didn't lose his temper, and he made it into an event that she remembers for the rest of her life, because she remembers this event for the rest of her life, tells it over to the whole family. Who is this Shima? Rebbetzin Shima Feinstein. She was zochah to marry Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hador. That bracha that her father gave her came about as true as a bracha could ever come. And I attribute that to two things. A, her being unbelievably makir Torah at the age of five, and her father's ability to not get angry, which is something that everybody can learn from, and to take something which would be, on one hand, a terrible event, and turn it into both a very positive event to her. She didn't lose any her zeal for Torah, and she'll remember that Seder for the rest of life, because the family tells over this story, and that's why Rabbi Moshe Meir Weiss was a Mesharis to Rav Moshe and to Rebbetzin Shima for 10 years. So he knew this story in person. And then I spoke with Rav Shalom Fried, who's a grandson-in-law of Rav Moshe. He says, yeah, this is a very well-known family story that everybody used to tell over. So I thought that's a great way to start off a shir on the Haggadah, to say how precious the Haggadah telling can be, and the Sipa Yetzias Mitzrayim can have ramifications. You know, if you could go into the Seder and say your child is going to have a rabbi or a Rebbetzin spouse in the future, like Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rebbe Shimonson Feinstein, then you're going to have a pretty good Seder. So that should be the way that we look at the Seder, is an unbelievable opportunity to transmit our Torah, to transmit values, to transmit all of the things that we think are very positive and good. And yes, it's Hashem, we should be zocha to do that. Okay, so now let's start off. I always try to do each year very little pieces, and I tell people you don't have to say it all over at one chunk. You can say it over the entire Pesach. You can say it over any time in the Seder. You don't have to always align your Dvar Torah with the paragraph that you just read. And I'm sure you all remember we were left off last year. It's right before we have the Esser Makos with the words Biyad Chazakah Zu Hadever. So we'll explain this very, very strange paragraph. Easy words in Hebrew. It's not very particularly hard. Easy words in Hebrew. It says Biyad Chazakah Zu Hadever. K'mo she'ne'emar, as the pasuk tells us, Hine Yad Hashem Hoya. The word Hoya is a little bit funny, but it's just the feminine form of feminine form of the word Haya. So it's Haya, it's just female for it was. So Hine Yad Hashem was Haya, b'miknicha, on their cattle, asher basodeh, that are out in the field, basusim, b'chamorim, b'gmalim. So it's on the mikneh, and on the susim, the chamorim, and the gmalim, b'bakur, b'tzom. So all of their flock, specifying the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the bakor, which is the bovine family, the cows, but son is usually translated as flock, which means goats and sheep. Okay, so dever kaved mod. So this refers to a very, very strong dever that came onto them. So there are numerous questions over here. Why is this dever? Why is the Yod Chazakah a reference to dever? It's a very, very strange thing. Why and how do we know that this is telling us that the Yod Chazakah, the iron fist of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the strong hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is referring to Dever? How do we know that? So the Mefarshim should bring down a very straight, simple, forward answer, because it's based upon the Pasuk. The Pasuk says here, Yad Hashem Hoya. It was the Yad of Hashem. And the Pasuk is talking about the Mark of Dever. So therefore, it's obvious that this is what the Yad Hashem means. Okay, that's obviously the straightforward shot. But there's much, much more to it. So there's an unbelievable Medrash Tehillim that says that b'chol maka shehevi HaKadosh Baruch al HaMitzrim b'Mitzrayim, with every maka that the Mitzrayim got, they also got dever. So with the dam, it was dever. It was this pestilence that attacked all the animals. With the dam, with the tzvardeya, with the kinim, every maka, the Medrash Tehillim says, had within it also dever, which makes dever into just about the worst possible thing that they could have had. And he brings various proofs from the psukim, which I'm not going to go into right now. And he said that the maka of dever was an extremely strong maka on the Mitzrayim, because it was really magnified by having been in every single maka. And that's why it's called Yad Chazakah. That's the reference over here in the Haggadah. The Baal Haggadah says, Biyad Chazakah, this is a reference to the dever that came with every single maka. Okay? Now, that's not enough. So the Shalah adds over here that not only, even though the Pasuk says, It hit the miknah, it hit the flocks, it hit the various horses, donkeys, camels, cows and sheep and goats. It also impacted the humans. So this was a double makkah, not only on the animals, but the Shalah brings down, again, the sources for all of this, I won't go through it. He says, Hadever sholat gam bivnei adam shenis'ar b'socham. There were people that were taking care of the animals. So anybody could get hurt by this dever, not only the animals. And that's why it's called Yad Chazakah, because it wasn't only on the animals. Again, if you ask people, well, which makkah would you want to have if you had to have any one of the 10 makkahs? People like to play those games. So dever sounds pretty good. All it does is it gets your animals. But not according to this. According to this, it also hit the people as well. So it was really an extra strong makkah in that it got the people and it also got the animals. Okay. Now, when you look at the next part of the Haggadah, which I didn't read yet, but the next part of the Zro and the Tuya, Zuacherev, the Zro and the Tuya, that refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sword, which we'll have to say what sword we were talking about. So, and that's based upon another passage. When Divrei Yom, Kishmo Shenemar, V'charbo Shlufa B'yado Netuya Rishloim, that where his sword was unsheathed, extended out over Yerushalayim. So the Mefarshim ask, so we're talking here about two makas, essentially, because that sword is a reference to makas bechoros. So this paragraph, seemingly arbitrarily, talks about two different makos. Yor chazakah, zro netuya, dever, and makas bechoros. It's very strange. You read this paragraph years after years after years, you know, sometimes don't appreciate the complexity of the Baal Haggadah. Why did this maka over here, this paragraph, talk about two seemingly disparate makas, borod and makas bechoros, dever and makas bechoros, thank you. So the Vilna Gaon says an amazing thing. The Vilna Gaon says that if you notice, each of them is the end of five makas. Dom, Tzvadei, Akinim, Orov, dever. Okay? Makas bechoros, obviously, is the last of the next five. So these two makos, dever and makas bechoros, are the end of a category of makkah. And therefore, the Vilna Gaon says that each one of them represents, so to say, the culmination of those five first makos in each category. The first five and then the second five. And the Vilna Gaon says that if you look at the word in the pasuk tells us, Ki biyod chazakah yishalchem, uviyod chazakah yigorshem me'artzo. Yod, it says twice. It says the word yad twice. How many fingers do you have in a yad? So you have five most of the time. So a person has five fingers in each hand. So the Vilna Gaon says, yod is a reference to the first five makos, and yod is a reference to the second five makos. And this answers up a very interesting question. How can you say that there was Yad Chazakah when we're going to read in the Haggadah a little bit later on, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, B'mitzrayim Waku Eser Makos, V'ayam Waku Hamishi Makos. Why? Because in the Mitzrayim it was Etzba Elokim, and that's why it's 10 Makos. In the Yam it was 10 times 5. That's where he gets the 50 from. But if you're just saying that Yad Chazakah, it was only on the Yam, so how do you explain it on Mitzrayim? Oh, you explain it very well according to this, that it was five and five etzbos. So therefore, it's telling us here that in fact, there is a remez to this idea of the 10 makos with these two makos, dever culminating the first five, and makas bechoros culminating the next five. And he adds further that there's additional complexity here. After the first five, Paro still hardened his own heart. He was able to explain away everything, or it didn't really impact him so much. He was able to purchase water from the Jews, and he was able to tolerate the various makos. So up to the first five, he still had his own heart. His own heart was hardened by himself. Afterwards, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to harden his heart. So that's also alluded to over here with the Yad Chazakah twice. The first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu let him, so to say, let his own nature carry him into trouble. And the second time HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped him along and hardened his heart. One more complexity to this. The Divrei Shaul brings down that in fact, why was it necessary, so to say, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do this, right? Today, we know infectious diseases, you could go send through the mail the anthrax and kill all the animals. Why did it need HaKadosh Baruch Hu, specifically Yad Chazakah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do this? He could have done it from afar. So just like we know by Makas Bechoros, and then the comparison here between Devar and Makas Bechoros is beautiful. By Makas Bechoros, he said, Ani ba'atzmi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to go by himself, because he had to know who was really the Bechor. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could know who the Bechoros was, because there was Mitzrayim was so shtufe zima, it wasn't clear who the mommy and the daddy were for everybody. So only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew who the real mother and the real father were, and he would be able to determine who was a Bechor, who was not a Bechor. Who was the Bechor La'aim, who was the Bechor La'av, who was the Bechor from this point of view, that point of view. So it required HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'chvodo v'atzma, niv lo malach. So the same thing happened by the Barad. Because the animals were all out there together. The Jewish-owned animals and the Goyisha, Mitzrayim-owned animals, were all out there together. There's no way that the pestilence on its own we're able to distinguish between this person and that person. We know from COVID, we know from the flu, we know from all diseases that it doesn't make a difference who's sitting next to you, whether they're Jewish or not Jewish, you could catch what they have. On its own, through Teva, there'd be no way to distinguish between the Jewish animals that were totally unaffected and the Goyish-owned animals that were absolutely affected. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo had to go take care of that. He had to say, this animal is owned by a Yid, it's not going to get the Dever. This animal is owned by a Mitzri, it's going to get the Dever. And he brings down the Divrei Shaul, he says, what happens if it was a Shutfis? What happens if it was co-jointly owned? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that as well, so he didn't kill that animal. If there was even a portion of it that was owned by a Yid, so that animal didn't die from the Dever. And that again shows you the depth of the Nisim within the Nisim of the Eser Makos. Now, we said the next paragraph talks about the Zroa Netuya. Okay, Zuya Cheriv. Right? The Lashon of the paragraph is Zroa Netuya Zuya Cheriv. Where do we find the Cheriv? Where do we find the sword? So this brings out one of my most enjoyable Medrashim. I've said this over many times, but it will add, if you haven't heard this before, it will add so much to your enjoyment every time you read what we call Halal Hagadol. Halal Gadol is the Hodol Hashem Kito Kiel Olam Chasto. We say every Shabbos morning with the 26 Kiel Olam Chasto. That's called Halal Hagadol. You're not supposed to say it all the time. We say it on Shabbos, a special thing. You don't say Halal Gadol all the time. We say it on the night of the Seder. And there's one of the 26 that is very puzzling. It says, Make Mitzrayim Bivchoreihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hit Mitzrayim with their Bechores. Now, the simple understanding is that he gave them Makas Bechoros. But there's a much deeper understanding. There's a Medrash. If you haven't heard this before, it's a Pella. If you heard this before, you'll enjoy it and smile. So the Medrash tells us that after batting 1,000 for 9 of 9 Makas, right, he would be an all-star on any team. Moshe Rabbeinu was batting 1,000 for the first 9 Makas. He then goes and tells all the Mitzrayim, listen, there's going to be another Maka, one more Maka that's coming. Anybody who's a Bechor is going to die. Now, if you're not a Bechor, maybe you don't quake so much. But if you're a Bechor, you're going to be pretty, pretty upset at that moment in time. So, whoa, you know, he has a perfect record. He just said that tomorrow night, all the Bechors are going to die at midnight. Maybe let's let the Jews out so this doesn't happen. So they had a protest. All of the Bechors went to their fathers and said, hey, dad or mom, what's doing? Go and make a demonstration to Paro that we should get out. Let the Jews out, because otherwise we're going to die. And what do the parents do? Parents say, no, we're not doing that. They say, Afilu kol ha-Mitzriyim Mesim. They said, even if all of the Mitzriyim die, we're not letting the Jews out. Again, we understand this Nebuch today more than we did maybe a year or two ago. The just absolute sinner, the absolute hatred that people have for the Jewish people. In China, there's almost no Jews. And somehow now there's tremendous anti-Semitism in China. Based on what? What did anybody ever do to them? Most of them have never met a Jew. And yet there's this underlying sin or hatred, anti-Semitism, that just pervades the whole world. It all started from Paro. Paro started the whole idea that the Jews are, we're Jews before we're Americans. We're Jews before we're Frenchies. We're Jews before we're Germans. Because Hovin Ischach Malo will be the fifth column. We'll go and cause trouble to them. We're not really Americans. We're not really Brazilians. We're not really French people. We're Jews. And therefore, we don't really care about the country that we're in. See, he started that. Paro was a premier anti-Semite, starting trouble for the Jewish people because we're Jews. We didn't do anything to them. All we did was make their country the best country in the world. We gave them food. Otherwise, they would have all died. That's the way they paid us back. That's the way they pay us back to this day. So they said, we would rather our own children die, but not let the Jews out. Again, mothers send their kids and they get excited when the children get blown up in a bomb. Oh, they're going to heaven with the 70 virgins. That's their, totally not understandable how a parent could do that to a child. But it started from Paro. And the parents of those children said, no, we're willing to sacrifice you in order that the Jews don't go out. So they went to Paro. Paro's a Bechor. They go to Paro, say, hey, you and us are all going to die tomorrow. And what does Paro do to them? Paro tells his security team, his guards, go beat them up. Go and hit the Bechors to tell them to stop complaining. Again, the unbelievable hatred for the Jewish people. Here you have a guy that says this is going to happen, and 9 times in a row it happened exactly. I would be pretty scared if he said something to the 10th time about me. And they didn't care, because it's more important that they hated the Jews than to let them out. So what did the Bechors do? They took matters into their own hands, and they took swords. This is the Zroa Netuya Zuha Cherev. They took swords and they attacked. And the Medrash brings down that they killed 600,000 Egyptians that night. That's an amazing number. And yet they all still died. All the Bechors died. Paro was the only Bechor that didn't die that night. Hashem kept him alive on purpose. He kept him alive at Yamsuf. And he becomes the Melech Nineveh, the king of Nineveh. The famous story with Yonah. The Medrash says, that was Paro. And when Yonah finally comes to Nineveh and says, you better do tshuva, Paro says, whoa, don't play games with this HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He means what he says. He means what he says. Don't play games. And as a result, Paro ultimately does tshuva, as unbelievable as that is, and tells the people of Nineveh, you better do tshuva. But it all started here from the Cherev of the Bechors. Maka Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim got a Maka. Be Bechoreim. With their Bechors. Their Bechors had a civil war that night. And that's what the Cherev is, according to the Medrash. Unbelievable. There's another opinion. The Shiboli Aleket's brother, also a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Binyamin. So he writes, the Cherev represents the special shame and forish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, known as Charbo Shel Moshe, the sword of Moshe. And this is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu carrying a sword and causing the Makos using this sword in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't go into details about it, but this was Moshe Rabbeinu, and he did all of the Osos, all of the miracles that he did, he somehow used the sword in some way, shape, or form. So that's just a very interesting idea as well. And for those who like gematrias, I know people have mixed feelings on gematrias. Some people love gematrias, and some people, it doesn't really do anything to them. But I always like gematrias because they spur interest and they make you think a little bit further. So what's the gematria of Cherev? So the gematria of Cherev is 210. And what is the gematria of Redu, that we were in Mitzrayim for the famous gematria of Redu? 210. So the Cherev shows a symbol that we're going to end, we're going to cut off the Shibud in Mitzrayim. Instead of it being a longer period of time, it only was 210 years. Everybody knows the Gematria of Redu, so here, this is also related to the word Cherev. And that Gematria is brought down from my favorite Haggadah, the Pe'er Aaron, one of the many commentaries in the Haggadah, Birchas Avraham, Birchas Aaron. Okay. The next thing that we go on to is the Bemorah Gadol. Uvamor Gadol, Zegilui Shechina. What exactly is Gilui Shechina, Mora Godol? So a number of the Mefarshim have ideas. What exactly does it mean, this Mora Godol? So one of the explanations for Mora Godol is the idea that the word means that it's Haroe Pnei HaShechina Yorei Ma'od Nofel HaPonav. When you see the Shechina, you're in awe. A person can't see the Shechina, but when you get an idea of the Shechina being present there in some way, shape, or form, so then you basically fall down. The Nevi'im, when they would have, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, who spoke Pa'al Pa'a, Daber Bo, all the other Nevi'im, when they spoke with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, they went into some sort of a state of not being a normal person. They went into some sort of a condition that they were unconscious, incapable of talking, because they were communicating with their Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that was overloading their system. And only when they woke up would they say what the Nevuah was. So this Mora Godol is a Gilui Shechina. When they saw the unbelievable Osos and Mosin that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought, so then they had this revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's this Mora Godol. So that's one explanation of what Mora Godol is. Another explanation, it comes from a Lashon of Mare, Shenigda Leineim B'Mitzrayim, that they finally understood. And Targum Unklus on the Pasuk says, B'chazuna Rabba, that they saw all these amazing things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for them, and they said, wow, now we really know that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the Mefarshim bring down that the miracles were not for the Mitzrayim. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to, he could just snap his finger, Kavi Yochel, and we'd be out of Mitzrayim in a second, and they're all dead. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the fanfare and all the big drum rolls and all the big things going on. He could instantaneously bring us out of Mitzrayim. Why did he make all these osos and ofsim? So I've said this many times. They're for us. They were for the people. We had sunk to such a low depth in Mitzrayim. We couldn't believe that we're coming out. We had to go slowly, step by step, up from the 49th Shari Tumah, from the depths of Tumah that we had sunk to slowly be brought back up to be free people, to be capable of accepting the Torah. And therefore, the Nisim, all the Niflos, were for us. They were for the Jewish people, not for the Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives them patch, and that's it. They're gone. They don't need anything else. But the miracles were all done for us to see this revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Gilui Shechina. And here the Per Aaron brings down another beautiful gematria. And the Per Aaron says that, amazing how he comes up with some of these things. So the Per Aaron says that the gematria of Gilui Shechina, and I check these out, it's exactly 434, 49, and 385, is exactly the gematria of Moshiach ben David. Exact gematria. In other words, this Gilui Shechina was the potential revelation we were supposed to go in. If we hadn't done the Chayta Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu would have taken us right into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu would have been Moshiach. Would have been Moshiach ben David. But the idea is that the ultimate Gilui Shechina will be when Moshiach Tzidkenu comes. We should have celebrate this year the Seder with the real Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. So that's the ultimate Gilui Shechina that we're referring to. And that is an interesting gematria. Okay. So then, we further have the pasuk that tells us, the Baal HaGadol continues, and he says, "B'mora Godol zegilu shchina shenemar, O haniso Elokim lavo lokaches lo goy mikerav goy." Has anybody ever come and taken a nation out from another nation? Never been done before, never done again. To remove a nation intrinsically from another nation, that A, number one, the first nation didn't intersperse with the second nation, so they're impossible to tell who's who. If you look back at the people in the United States that came originally from whichever part, they came from Ireland, they came from England, they came from Germany, they came from France. In America, they're all intermixed. You can't even tell whose original nationality, where they're from, except the Jewish people. We remain separate for a purpose. We're supposed to maintain our separateness, and that's for a purpose, that we shouldn't become intermixed and interspersed with all the goyim. And that's the idea that the pasuk says, that has anybody ever been able to take a goy out in the care of goy? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this. And again, the Per Aaron gives another beautiful gematria. He says, goy mikerev of goy, a nation taken out from another nation, is the exact gematria of Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. It's alluded to with the Gematria, 380 Mitzrayim, 380 Goy, Mikarev Goy. He took a nation out from another nation, which is, again, unheard of from human history. There's no other example that you could cite where one nation left another nation intact as an entire group. We don't have such a thing. And that's the miracles that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. So that's this Mora Gadol. And he did it with several things. But Goy Mikarev Goy, B'masos, Ba'osos, Uvimovsim, Uvimuchama, Uviyachazakah, Uvizuanutuya, Uvimorim Gidolim, Kehola Sha'osol Lechem Hashem Lokechem Mitzrayim Lenecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did all of these unbelievable things for us. So let's look at some of them and what they are. So he brings down. Ba'osos Zehamata. The next paragraph tells us, Ba'oso Zamata. First we quoted the whole pasuk, and then each of the next paragraphs discusses individual things. So we'll discuss some of them ourselves. So Ba'osos, this is a reference to the Mata. This Mata is proof that the idea that I just said, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the Nisim for us and not for the Mitzriim. Because again, if he wanted to just give the Mitzriim klep, all you have to do is hit him once, and that's it, they're gone. So they were for us. Now, you might doubt that and say, well, yeah, you're just saying that because that's after the fact. But how do you know before the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done it with one fell swoop, but instead he chose to do it with 10 steps, the Makos? And that's because the Makos were engraved on the Mata. It said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, B'tzach Adash B'yachav, so that was engraved on the Mata. So anybody that saw this Mata and said, well, if you really wanted to, you could have done one. No, you couldn't have. So he said, yeah, I could have. But I specifically had the plan to do it with 10 so the Jewish people would benefit from seeing these Makos one after the other and raise us up. And the proof is that it was written on the staff. Now, where did this staff come from? There's, again, a fascinating medrash. It came from Bereishis. This is one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Bein Hashmashos and Bereishis. And this Mata was then given over to Adam HaRishon, who ultimately gave it over to Noah, who ultimately gave it over to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, and ultimately went to Yosef, and it went down to Mitzrayim. And it was kept, after Yosef died, it was taken, all of Yosef's property was taken over by Paro, and kept in the coffers of Mitzrayim. Until a gentleman by the name of Yisro came along and saw it, and he was one of the three advisors to Paro. We all know the story that Paro originally was good. People don't realize that maybe. For the first 3 months that they wanted to go and conscript all the Jews and give us all tzaris, Paro fought against it for the first 3 months. He said, the Jews have been good to us. So they basically threw Paro in jail, and the Paro said, okay, well, let's persecute the Jews. And then he became Paro. But he had three advisors. He had Bilam, Eov, and Yisro. I mentioned this in the past. And Bilam, final solution, kill the Jews, and we know what happened to Bilam. Eov was silent. Eov was a silent majority. He didn't say anything. And that's why Eov was forced to scream. That's why Eov had to go on. All the punishments that Eov went through was to show him that you don't be silent. I'll make you scream. You should have screamed when they wanted to persecute the Jewish people. Instead, you were silent. Eov was a good person, but he was silent. He sees all the horrors that are going on, and he's silent. So that's not the right way for a person to act. And therefore, he was held accountable, and he was punished with all the travails that Eov went through. And Yisro said, hey, I'm out of here. You can't do this. This is wrong. And as he leaves, he takes the Mata from the coffers of Paro, and he takes it with him to Midian. And he plants it in the ground. And it stays in the ground. And it can't go out. King Arthur and the sword, they stole this from this Medrash. He plants the Mata into the ground, and he said, anybody that pulls this Mata out can marry my daughter Tzipora. Everybody tried. Nobody pulled it out. Moshe Rabbeinu comes in there one day, he says, oh, what's this Mata in the ground? And he picks it up, and it comes right out. He says, oh, you're going to marry Tzipora. It's not as simple. The Medrash has, at first he threw him in jail for 10 years, like every good father-in-law. He wanted to kill his son-in-law first, but okay, we'll leave that for another time. But ultimately, he marries Tzipora, and that's where he gets the mateh from. And with this mateh, he goes and causes all of these mos osos. So this is the mateh that's referring to. Okay, and all of them, all the makos were done with this mateh, either sometimes himself, sometimes Aaron. Okay, now, next thing is the mofsim. So the mofsim, it says, fine. Okay. Now, the next one is the mofsim. What's the difference between an os and a mofes? They sound very, very similar. So the mefarshim bring down that a os doesn't cause damage. An os is just like a sign. Oh, this happened. That's a miraculous thing, but didn't cause damage. A mofes, that already causes damage. That gave them a patch. So that's the difference between an os and a mofes, if you ever wondered, is there a difference between them? And he says that the mofsim, this is a reference to the dam, as the pasuk says, k'mo shenemar v'nasati mofsim b'shamayim u'v'oretz. Now, how exactly does that tell you that it's a reference to the dam? So that's an interesting question. So the mefarshim bring down a number of interesting answers to this question. So first we have the opinion of the Ritva. The Ritva says it's called Mofsim, that's a Lashon Rabim. It didn't say Mofes. It says Mofsim, which is a Lashon of Rabim, plural. Because he said that with the Dam came multiple Nisim. We're familiar with all of the different stories about how many Nisim occurred with the Dam. So he gives some examples. He said that the waters of the Nile were the most clearest waters. Shamayim Tzlulim, we call Mayim Shabolam. And nevertheless, they turned to Dam. That would have been like the last body of water that you would expect it to turn to Dam. And he said the classical, this you learn in your kindergarten classes, everybody remembers it, that if a Jew was drinking from the same cup as a Mitzri, the water would come up in the straw of the Jewish person, and blood would come up in the straw of the Mitzri person. So in the same glass, you could have this divide of the water. So that was an ace within an ace. Okay? It brings down as well from Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai that Nasim Ke'esh Soref Umismale Kol Mitzrayim Oshon. He says that the waters turned to blood and this somehow burned and caused tremendous smoke all over Mitzrayim. And that's in fact the next part of that God that says Dom Va'esh V'Simros Oshon. Always a Pella, how do you translate Dom Va'esh V'Simros Oshon? So according to this Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai, so it's a reference to the Dam causing a tremendous smoke. I don't know if it was boiling Dam, but it was somehow causing a smoke to go across all of Mitzrayim. Okay. Then he brings down from the Vilna Gaon that this Dam has nothing to do with Makas Dam. He says it's not Makas Dam. Ein akavon l'makas dam. This is the Mofes that Moshe Rabbeinu did. Sheshofech asamayim v'yu l'dam b'yaboshes. So Moshe Rabbeinu showed them the sign, I'm going to turn the water into blood. But it's not talking about the mark of dam. It's an oath that it was showing them. This Mofes was really like an oath that he showed to Paro. It wasn't the mark of dam. Interesting, different interpretation. Okay. Then he brings down to the Pesach Doros. He says, this is a reference actually to the Makkah of Shchin, to the boils, that they were Hirtiach Domam. You know, when you get an infection, a person get very, very high fevers, and they get all sorts of, sepsis signs and symptoms. We have ways to measure this in the hospital to see how sick somebody is. And it's as if the blood boils. And he said, that's what this was. This is a reference not to the Makkah of Dam. This is a reference to the Makkah of Shchin. Okay? And he says, this is like Piach HaKivsho, like the mouth of a furnace. And that also caused the Eish. So the smoke and the fire in the smoke. So again, this is Dom V'Eish V'Timros Oshon, another way to explain it. The Abarbanel says that Bichlal Dam, there were three Makos. That the Dam doesn't only refer to the Makkah of Dam, but it refers to Arov, Shchin, and Choshech. And the Baal HaGadah calls it Dam for various reasons. But it's actually multiple Makos. And why? He says the Arov, which is the wild animals attacking people, so they gnashed at people, they clawed at people, they tore apart people. That's dam. They caused a lot of dam to be spilled. Bali chayim, torfim. They came into the people's houses. Imagine, you know, you lock your doors and all of a sudden through the window comes a bear and a lion. Terrifying. This is an unbelievable miracle. And it tore them literally apart. And that's the dam that this is referring to. Okay? Next thing he says is the shrin. So, ifush adam vefsedo. So, again, it caused these boils to come up and it caused them to lose blood. People have wounds, have all sorts of skin manifestations from various illnesses, so they can bleed. So, that's a reference to the dam. The second reference to the dam. So, it's arov and the shrin. And then as well, he says choshech. Why? Because it blocked out the rays of the sun. Shaya or hashemesh adam dam. It blocked it. It became very fiery red originally. The sun's normally like a yellowish color, but when you have under certain atmospheric conditions that block some of the rays of the sun, it becomes a fiery red. And he says that's what it was referring to over here. And that's why it says v'nasati movsim, plural. I gave many, many miracles over here. It's not just the dam, ein akavon olamakas dam, but it's a combination of all of these things. Again, very difficult paragraph to understand, and we're just touching the surface of it. We'll conclude the shiur tonight with the last part over here, which is that it's dam va'esh v'simros oshim, which we started to explain. And many people have a custom that they dip from the wine out and take out some of the wine and they take it out. So why is that done? So a number of reasons are given. The most common reason is given is that we should still, as much as we are thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving us from Mitzrayim, we're still saddened that it caused loss of life. Even if the loss of life is Hamas, even if the loss of life was the Mitzrayim, who were worse than Hamas, and even if it's the life of the Germans, and even if it's the life of all these horrible people that have done horrible, horrible things to us, we still, as ethical, moral, nice people, are still disturbed by anybody having to die, despite the fact that they deserved it, and despite the fact that they caused it to themselves. We had nothing to do with it. But we're still not going to fully rejoice. And therefore, we take off some of the wine, which is pleasure. So we minimize a little bit our pleasure, even though we are 100% right, and even though this was a life or death situation, which Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to live, but we still minimize some of that victory. We put a little bit aside. And it's amazing how our customs are just so rich. There are so many different minhagim as to how to take out the wine from the cup. I found at least 4, possibly 5 different minhagim, all with sources to suggest what to do. Ultimately, it says, umar kid'ovid, whichever way you do it is fine. So we'll start off with the Arizal, which is probably the one that nobody does. The Arizal based upon Kabbalah, so that's why I say it's 4 reasons. This will be the 4th reason, but some suggest it's a 5th reason based upon hygiene. And he says, don't put your fingers into the cup. Pour out a little bit into another cup. He says, actually pour it into a broken cup. Interesting. Pour a little bit out into a broken cup. We minimize our pleasure a little bit, but don't put your finger into the cup either because Kabbalistic reasons or because there are some people that are fussy, they're istinous, they're really into hygiene. And if you stick, even if it's your own finger into your own cup, you're not going to want to drink that. But you're mechuyev to drink that whole cup, or at least roll over that cup. So therefore, it's going to cause people uncomfortable feeling. So therefore, we don't do it. That's the Arizal. Then you have the opinion that's brought down by the Ramah, the Magen Avraham, the Vilna Gaon. You take etzba. Which is etzba? Etzba to point the finger. Point the finger is always called etzba. And you take the point of it again because etzba lokim, we're constantly referring to the etzba of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyochel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have an etzba. But we say he puts his point of figure in, so many dip with the point of figure in, take a little bit out, put it on the side. Others do it based again upon Kabbalistic reasons brought down in the Hagos Minhagim, brought down by the Magen Avraham. You take the pinky. I didn't see anybody say this, you like this. The pinky is the smallest finger, it takes out the smallest amount of the wine. So we want to minimize it, but we don't want to do any more than we have to. That's my own thought. If you like it, you can say it over. If not, you ignore it. Okay. The next one is the Yalkut. The Yalkut says you take the Kmitza finger. What's the Kmitza finger? Who's doing Daf Yomi? The Kmitza finger is your ring finger. Because the Kmitza is done with the 3 middle fingers. They would scoop it up. With a thumb, you would wipe off the top of the flour when the Kohen did the Kmitza to take the handful of flour and offer that on the Mizbeach. And with the pinky, you would wipe it off in the bottom. And it's closest to the Kmitza, which was the handful, which is really three fingers full. And that's why this ring finger is called the Kmitza finger. And again, based upon Psukim, some suggest you dip with your ring finger and take it out. So there are four different customs over here, the pointer finger, the ring finger, the pinky, or just pour it out. And I'll conclude tonight's shiur, because it's 9 o'clock, with something that I just saw for the first time from the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav said, and this is an important thing, even if we don't follow what the Brisker Rav says exactly, everybody should follow this. He says, you're mechuyev to go and say the Seder on a full kos. So after you pour out, most people pour out three times for Dam Eish V'Simros Oshon, 10 times for the Makkah, and then three times, Detzach, Adash, Biachav. So most people do 16 times, and next year, Mirtz Hashem, we'll go through why 16. But there are those that do Bidomayichayi, another two times, so there's 18 times for Chai. So whether you do it 16 times or 18 times altogether, you have to fill up the cup afterwards. So you should pour in afterwards, because you're reading that God, there should be on a kos mole. If you took off 16 or 18 drops, it's still looking pretty full, but it's not full. So you're supposed to fill it up. The Brisker of Lashitas HaBriskers, so he says, it's not good enough to pour the cup in afterwards. You didn't say the Haggadah then on the full kos. Part of it's poured out. So what the Briskers did, they poured two cups for the second cup of the Haggadah. So they have two cups out there, and then he would take from the other cup and pour it into the first cup. So therefore, you're saying the Haggadah, you said it on the entire coast. The entire Haggadah is said on the entire coast, even though it was two coasts, but you poured from your spare cup that you had out there, you poured it into the first cup. Whether you follow the briskas or not important, I don't think. The critical thing is to remember to fill up the cup after you take it off. We should have a full cup. We should have full simcha. B'ezras Hashem, thank you for coming and listening to the shiur. It should be a wonderful ilu for the neshamas of my holy parents and my Aunt Berta. And B'ezras Hashem, everyone should have a wonderful zis in Pesach, echa kosher v'sameach. Thank you for listening and thank you for coming.